Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. Analyst, sales shows it's hard to be standalone company. This is by Kevin Crowley and David Wythe of Bloomberg News. There's no more dramatic sign of the U.S. shales industry's fall from grace than one of the best in the business being sold off for less than a third of its peak value. Concho Resources, Inc., an early explorer of the Permian Basin's once coveted oil riches that was worth $32 billion just 2 years ago, is selling for $9.7 billion in stock. ConocoPhillips is paying 15% premium over Concho's closing price on October 13th, the last trading session before Bloomberg News first reported the companies were in talks. Concho is not alone. More than half of the shale deals this year came with a premium of less than 10% over stock prices that had already plunged in the past couple of years, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Shale explorers have rapidly lost favor with Wall Street after years of high debt, poor shareholders' returns, and value-destroying deals. The devastating impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on oil demand made matters worse, pushing many into bankruptcy. Private equity firm Kimmeridge Energy is among investors urging the highly fragmented industry to seek low-premium deals, gain scale, and cut costs. To sell out at a 15% premium, I think, sends the message that it's going to be a lot harder to be a standalone. Oil company Jennifer Rowland, an analyst at Edward Jones, said Monday in a phone interview. In just the last few weeks, Chevron Corporation concluded the purchase of Noble Energy, Inc. for a modest 12% premium, while WPX Energy, Inc. agreed to merge with Devon Energy Corp. for a benefit of just 4.2% above its pre-deal share price, according to data combined by Bloomberg. Both deals, like Concho and Conoco, were all stock transactions, meaning there's no golden parachute for investors. The more down-to-earth deals of late are in stark contrast to Occidental Petroleum Corporation's $37 billion acquisition of Anadarko Petroleum Corp. last year. The purchase raised the ire of billionaire investor Carl Icahn and left Occidental, which is now worth little more than $9 billion, saddled with $40 billion of debt. We looked at the way the world was changing and the need for size and scale, Concho Chief Executive Officer Tim Leach said in an interview. The fact that this transaction is 100% stock on a relative basis, all our shareholders are still exposed to all the upsides of the combined company. While executives like Leach point to the value of being able to participate in an oil price rally with an all-stock deal, it's also a sign that buyers are not willing to fund purchases with cash, which would often mean taking on debt. And tapping shareholders for funds is out of the question. Energy has slumped to less than 2%. Of the S&P 500 index, down from more than 11% a decade ago, even as the wider market rose to record levels. U.S. oil production has tumbled to around 10.5 million barrels a day from a record 13 million earlier this year. That is the equivalent of removing more than the current production of OPEC member Kuwait. The industry is unlikely to make that back anytime soon, and more declines may be on the way next year. Occidental Petroleum Corporation CEO Vicky Haloob said last week the U.S. may never again reach those record production levels. This is in part due to shale wells' rapid decline rate, as much as 70% within the first year, and the need for new wells and money to drill them to offset the production drop-off. With the underlying decline rate that approaches 40%, it's hard to distribute cash back to the shareholders as rapidly as we can in this new model, says Leach. ConocoPhillips plans to retain Midland presence by Mella McEwen. Despite the COVID-19 pandemic slashing oil demand and the oil market crash that has sent crude prices tumbling, ConocoPhillips sees an opportunity in the Permian Basin's unconventional shales, so much that it's snapping up Midland's Concho resources in an all-stock transaction valued at $9.7 billion, $13.3 billion if total enterprise value is taken into consideration. The merger will create a company with an approximately $60 billion enterprise value. Our transaction with ConocoPhillips is an incredible opportunity for Concho that will deliver significant benefits for Midland and other communities where we operate, said Megan P. Hayes, Vice President of Investor Relations and Public Affairs at Concho, who told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Through this combination, we will join a larger organization that has greater scale and resources, and the combined company will enhance its competitive position in Midland. We are proud of the ways in which our company and our employees have contributed to our local communities and look forward to joining with ConocoPhillips, which shares our commitment to investing in our people and enhancing the places where we live and work, she said. John Roper, Director, Media Relations and Crisis Communications at ConocoPhillips, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that the transaction represents an exceptional opportunity to combine two successful companies. While we expect to find savings from this acquisition that will require some reductions in Midland staff, the combination creates a significant company of scale and quality with leadership, assets, financial strength, and a culture to weather economic ups and downs and create value through the business cycles. A stronger company is good for Midland, Roper said. He said, here is a transition planning team actively analyzing synergies that will result in general and administrative and capital reductions. It's very early on, but we do expect to find duplicative positions that will result in job losses from both companies. He added that ConocoPhillips plans to keep Concho's office complex in downtown Midland. Upon closing, Tim Leach, Concho's chairman and CEO, will join ConocoPhillips' board of directors and executive leadership team as executive vice president and president Lower 48. In Avera, senior M&A analyst Andrew Dittmer told the Reporter-Telegram by email, Concho Resources is one of the premier acquisition targets among U.S. shale drillers, and Conoco is on a very short list of potential buyers, so this deal looks to be a natural fit on both sides. The $13.3 billion deal is the largest upstream merger entirely focused on shale since BHP bought PetroHawk for $15 billion in 2011. Given that more recent combinations of Occidental Anadarko and Chevron Noble had significant international exposure, buying Concho strategically fills a gap in Conoco's portfolio. While well-positioned in multiple U.S. plays like the Eagle Ford and the Bakken and internationally, Conoco lagged rivals in the Permian. Adding Concho's 550,000 net acres emphatically changes that and adds years of high-quality inventory to Conoco's portfolio. Conoco's patience waiting for the right deal appears well rewarded as the company is picking up one of the premier positions in the Permian at a fraction of the cost of other large deals in the basin over the last few years on a dollar per acre basis. With over $30 billion in announced E&P mergers now on the books in 2020, including two deals over $10 billion, shale consolidation is well underway, he said. Even the total dollar amount transacted significantly understates the scale of the consolidation going on in the industry, given a still depressed equity price relative to past years. This is a historic turning point in the development of U.S. unconventional resources. Robert Clark, Vice President, Lower 48 Upstream at Wood Mackenzie, said in a statement, "The combination is remarkable, just in regards to scale. ConocoPhillips is adding enough Permian production to nip at the heels of ExxonMobil's massive program. We like the distinctions each firm brings too. Concho has a history of acquisitions in the region and brings a considerable amount of incumbent Permian knowledge. ConocoPhillips has proven itself as a leader in shale technology. This can be seen in how its Bakken and Eagle Ford projects have progressed down the cost curve, as well as how successfully it manages later life shale declines. The combination bodes well for the Permian's long-term outlook." Ben Chetuk, director at Wood Mackenzie, added, "Concho would be on the short list of any potential Permian buyer. Through a multitude of acquisitions, the company has been able to piece together one of the best footprints in the area. It holds core assets in both Midland and the Delaware basins and the right balance of production and cash flow to inventory. While Concho had the odd operational hiccup in the past, there's plenty of runway for ConocoPhillips to put its spin on development. Also important is that Concha has been a leader in the Midland community and an early mover by shale standards on the ESG front. Clark added, potentially overlooked is that ConocoPhillips will now reduce its exploration budget. If buying resource rather than exploring becomes a trend, the momentum for tight oil consolidation stands to increase considerably. Concho timeline. The Concho resources that is being acquired by ConocoPhillips is actually the third iteration of the company. The original Concho was formed in 1997 by Tim Leach and other former members of Parker and Parsley, now Pioneer Natural Resources, and it was sold to Devon Energy in 2000. The second Concho Resources was sold to Chesapeake Energy in 2003 for $510 million. Wheeling and dealing in the Permian. In 2016, Noble Energy buys Clayton Williams Energy for $2 billion. 2018, Concho buys RSP Permian for $9.5 billion. Diamondback Energy buys Energen Corp for $9.2 billion. 2019, Occidental Petroleum outlasts Chevron and buys Anadarko Petroleum for $55 billion. 2020, Chevron buys Noble Energy for $5 billion. Devon Energy buys WPX Energy for $2.56 billion.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Tuesday, October 20th. Conoco CEO says acquisition is marriage of two great companies, from staff reports. ConocoPhillips CEO Ryan Lance was interviewed on CNBC Monday after it was announced that the company was acquiring Midland-based Concho Resources. Here are highlights of that interview. CNBC. In your press release announcing the deal, there's a quote from you that says you believe today's transaction is an affirmation of our commitment to lead a structural change for our vital industry. What does that actually mean? Lance. What it means is we recognize the low returns this industry's had over the last decade. So we put together a value proposition and a company that's really going to focus on compelling returns back to the shareholder, a sustainable company with respect to our ESG strategy that we're deploying as a company. And it really is about low-cost supply chain and a resilient and very strong balance sheet. It's about adequate capital allocation that really focuses on value overgrowth. It's about distributions back to the shareholder and doing that in a sustainable way that recognizes the energy transition that we're going through as a globe. CNBC. You mentioned sustainability at least twice just now and ESG very early in your answer. Is this transition in some way a catalyst for trying to reach some of these goals that you're talking about in ESG? Lance. Well, certainly, the unconventionals in the U.S. are some of the lowest equivalent carbon per barrel of production anywhere in the world today. So this transaction and bringing in the Concho business into our company is really a marriage of two great companies that have a similar view around sustainability, around the communities that we work in, and all the aspects of ESG that make this important. It is a great complement between the two companies and one where we are going to add 23 billion barrels of resource that has an average cost of supply and less than $30 a barrel WTI. That's the resilience phase. That's the long-term nature of this transaction, and one that recognizes all the key drivers that are important in this business. CNBC. Now, another key part would seem to be something we weren't aware of previously, is that Tim Leach, the CEO of Concho, is essentially going to be running your lower 48, as you're putting it, the president of that. Why, and what does that mean in terms of the way you view the company? Lance. Well, I think it's a recognition of the tremendous company that Tim has built over the course of many decades. He's put together a fabulous company that has a huge position in the Permian Basin, both the Delaware and the Midland Basins. It will be a great augment into our company, and it's really important in these conventional developments to share learnings across and quickly down the learning curve to create the margins that are really important in a very volatile macro environment that we see today. So we're going to be the largest independent company with 1.5 million barrels a day production. And we will be one of the most diverse companies. We have huge positions in the Eagle Ford, in the Bakken, and now a huge position in the Delaware, and a growing position in Canada. So our conventional portfolio is growing, and that is balanced against a global footprint and a conventional and other assets within the company that reduce the capital intensity. It just adds to the global diverse nature. So it's Alaska, it's Canada, it's Europe, it's Norway, it's Asia Pacific, it's the Middle East. So we bring a unique portfolio to the upstream E&P space that we think is unmatched by anywhere. The acquisition of Concho just adds to that resiliency and that low-cost supply and resource base that we've got inside company that's going to last for decades, which is really exciting. CNBC, you run a great company. You even raised your dividend last week. You have done every bit of capital discipline that could ever be dreamed. Really kind of a wonder in this environment. And yet your stock is still 48%. And one of the reasons why I've been saying it's not investable is not because of something you're doing. So what I'm struggling with, and I think this is a great merger because I've always liked Concho, is that what does it take for investors to decide this is the bottom? You've got a good yield. You have to buy. Lance, yeah, we're so convinced, Jim, that we got to change the paradigm. We've got to attract more investors back into this business. The way we do that is to compete against the industrial space. So if you look at the dividend and what it is yielding today, you look at the free cash flow yield, the top line growth that we can create as a company. It is the fundamental things investors are going to want out of this business. We're going to try to take volatility out. We've got a strong balance sheet to run through that volatility, to continue to invest our capital, to continue to give our returns back to the shareholders. So it's a growing dividend. When we get excess cash, we will try and return more back to the shareholder. We've committed to 30% of our cash going back to the shareholder. You've already mentioned the strong dividend yield. We've got the resources to grow and the low cost and supply. So we know we're only going to invest in things that have less than $40 a barrel WTI cost and supply. So that ensures that we're going to get an after-tax return of 10%, and you will see growing returns over time. We will demonstrate that. We understand we got to put quarter after quarter after quarter performance together. But if you look at our performance as a company, as ConocoPhillips, that's what we've been doing. It's a shareholder-friendly approach to the business. This acquisition of Concho, it supercharges that, and it gives us the resource base to really do this for decades, decades to come. That is what I want to convince you. It is an investable value proposition in the space, but it's something new and something different. CNBC. Look, Tim Leach is fantastic. I happened to listen to presentations by Jack Harper, and he made this point. He said, you know what? We in the Permian, speaking, are terrible to ourselves. We're not good, sweet producers. We don't know what to do. We are predicting 5 going on to 7, and then we go to 4. We don't have a handle on things. Will the combined company have a better sense of where oil is going? And I know you like that great trend line, but if Mr. Harper and the industry doesn't have that kind of discipline, how can you change the industry? I think we're going to show the discipline with the combination of Concho and ConocoPhillips. We are going to create this strong balance sheet that is able to really withstand the volatility we know it's going to come. We can't predict the price. Prices are going to go up, they're going to go down, and not necessarily in that order. So creating something that's going to embrace that volatility. We think longer-term crude prices are going to come down due to the energy transition. So that's why we're only investing in the lowest cost and supply resources that we have in the portfolio. And we have 23 billion barrels of that sitting inside the portfolio today. So we recognize it's not going to go up. It's going to go down. OPEC, what do they do? What do the Russians do? What does the U.S. conventional do? That's all the pricing. What we have created here is some that can operate through the cycles and embrace the volatility we know is going to happen in this business. And it's completely unpredictable. But if we are investing in low-cost and supply supplier and a value proposition that can deliver double-digit returns to shareholders, that's going to be something we believe is compelling to all value investors in the business. And that's what we're bound and determined to the investor, so they can come back to investing in a vehicle that can give those kinds of returns. CNBC, you are talking about $500 million in annual costs and capital savings by 2022. But I want to understand, we've talked a lot here about Mr. Leach. Are you going to fully integrate the Concho Resources businesses into your own? And are there going to be layoffs, for example, in places like Midland? Lance, well, there will be synergy that we've got to capture. We laid out $500 million a year. That's going to be G&A, general and administrative cost, reductions across the whole portfolio as we think about that. Far more significantly for the resources that we're bringing in, we're making a strategic shift in how we think about long-term exploration for the company. We're going to keep doing some exploration. We'll do that around existing assets in areas like Alaska, Norway, and Malaysia. But thinking about the money that we've allocated to finding those things during the next 10 to 20 years, we're going to pare that back. So the expenses associated with that and the capital associated with that represents about $250 million a year. There's additional synergies that we expect to capture on the G&A side. That is the $500 million run rate to reach by the end of next year and into 2022.
Local briefs. City reports 89th death, 106 new cases. The city on Monday reported the 89th coronavirus-related death and 106 new confirmed cases. The patient, a female in her 70s with underlying health conditions, was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, according to a press release. She died Sunday. The 106 cases brings the overall count during the pandemic to 4,550. These cases are reflective of lab results from Friday through Sunday. The three-day total reported Monday is 33 more than it was reported on October 12th and 62 more than was reported on October 5th. The Midland Health Department also reported Monday there are 1,519 active cases, 44 more than Friday, and 2,700 recoveries, which is 54 more than Friday. City, murder suspect in custody. A man is being held in New Mexico jail on a murder charge in connection with the death of an 18-year-old woman, according to the press release from the city spokeswoman. Daniel Anderson has been sought in the death of Cheyenne Valentine, according to the release. Midland police found the body of Valentine early Monday morning at an apartment in the 5200 block of Briarwood Avenue when they responded to a call of an unconscious female. Valentine's boyfriend was at the scene and told police he had dropped Valentine off at the apartment to visit a friend while he stayed in the parking lot. After a while, he went to the apartment, heard a disturbance, and forced entry. He found Valentine, who was unconscious, according to the release. The man in the apartment, later identified as Anderson, fled the scene. The investigation is ongoing, and it is believed that Valentine and Anderson knew each other and that this is an isolated incident, according to the release. City. Four people were stabbed in a fight. The investigation continues into the stabbing incident that occurred Saturday night, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Police responded to the 800 block of Canyon Drive at 10:45 p.m. Saturday in reference to a disturbance call. Numerous people were involved in a large fight, according to the release. Four people were injured with stab wounds and were transported to Midland Memorial in stable condition. One other person was detained and questioned, but no arrest had been made as of Sunday evening. From the opinion page, 10 of October 20th, this is the opinion extra from the MRT. Peyton needs to call on residents to follow coronavirus measures. Mayor Patrick Peyton, our community needs your help. You stood in front of the Tall City Brewery on September 17th and declared that Midland is open for business. That day is noteworthy because 1 week earlier, the Midland Health Department reported the fewest number of cases going back to early June at 79. It appeared Midlanders had at least contained the coronavirus's spread and better times were ahead. Since you stood there and called out leaders in Austin, the governor has responded to requests to open up bars and more businesses. At the same time, schools haven't been this full since March, and COVID protocols have been relaxed around the community. And since you said use of localized measures to combat the virus and an emphasis on personal responsibility should be replicated in Texas, things haven't gotten better. The number of coronavirus cases has increased every week in Midland County to 268 last week. Things have gotten so bad that Midland Memorial Hospital is having to take in patients from other parts of the region. Midland health officials have stated that the number of tests inside Midland County is higher, and so is the percentage of Midland County residents testing positive. I appreciate what you have said about Midland County residents having a responsibility to act in a way that doesn't harm themselves or their neighbors. You have said when there is a problem, Midland County residents will take the initiative to do what's right. You have also said that businesses should be able to operate in a manner that is safe for their customers. We need you, the most outspoken about limited regulations coming from Austin, to call on Midland County residents to take it upon themselves to take control of the situation today. Practice those measures that health officials are still calling for, and frankly, to love their neighbor as themselves. You're not being asked to reverse your call about bars opening or opinions about mandates that aren't being enforced. You are also not being asked to stop your continued calling out of the governor in a way that negatively impacts the Republican Party now and moving forward. Midland County residents just need our leaders, especially the most vocal and respected during the last few months, to remind them that they can continue to live their lives as they wish, but taking a few measures would be in the best interest of the entire community. To this community's credit, the rise in numbers of coronavirus cases isn't to the degree that it is in El Paso, Lubbock, or Amarillo, but also cases aren't as low as they are in Abilene, San Angelo, or as low as they were in Midland 1 month ago. Mayor, our community can do better. Are you willing to call on our residents to do better, just like when you were willing to call out the governor when bars couldn't open? Editor, Stuart Doreen, sdoreen@hearstnp.com.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reported Telegram for Tuesday, October 20, 2020. Survivors and supporters. Cancer survivors and their supporters listened to speakers Saturday morning at the 2020 Pink the Park event at the Scarborough Sports Complex. Early voting continues. Early voting for the November 3 general election continues through October 30 at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street. MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive. St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive. Through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Early voting totals. Monday, 3,509. October 13, 3,259. Wednesday, 3,330. Thursday, 3,399. Friday, 3,780. Mail-in ballots, 2,520, total 19,797. Meetings today. City Council, 10 a.m., Council Chambers, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Avenue. Midland College, 4 p.m., Carrasco Room. Gas prices. Midland-Odessa gas prices have fallen 3.1 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $1.97 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland-Odessa are 7.1 cents per gallon higher than a month ago and stand 37.8 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gasoline prices in Midland-Odessa on October 19, going back 10 years. 2019, $2.35 a gallon. 2018, $3.04 a gallon. 2017, $2.46 a gallon. 2016, $2.06 a gallon. 2015, $2.03 a gallon. 2014, $3.01 a gallon. 2013, $3.16 a gallon. 2012, $3.67 a gallon. 2011, $3.46 a gallon. 2020, $2.72 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. MCPL to host Fall Festival Pumpkin Decorating Contest. Midland County Public Library is hosting a drive-through trunk-or-treat Fall Festival 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday at the downtown branch. Decorated trunks and tables will line the parking lot. Several of the library's community partners have volunteered to decorate a trunk and hand out treats. Chevron, Education Management and Staffing Solutions, First 5 Permian Basin, Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland, Keep Midland Beautiful, Matthews Martial Arts, Familia Dental, Mama Movement, The Little Gym, Therapy Dogs International, Midland Community Theater, and Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Midland County Public Library Foundation is providing books for kids to take home. Families should enter from Missouri Avenue, remain in their cars as they drive through the festival, and exit on Big Spring Street. Also, MCPL is accepting entries into its Literary Pumpkin Contest. Midlanders of all ages may enter a pumpkin decorated as a book character. Participants should not carve the pumpkins, according to a press release from the library. The deadline for entries is noon Friday. They may be dropped off at either branch. Winners in four age categories, 4 to 7, 8 to 12, 13 to 17, and adult, will be announced via Facebook Live at the beginning of the festival. Prizes include gift certificates from Domino's Pizza, Fiddlesticks Farms, Museum of the Southwest, and Whataburger. Texas Size Garage Sale continues. Texas Size Garage Sale, the annual fundraiser for Meals on Wheels, continues today at 407 East Scarborough Drive. There are two sessions, 9 to 11 a.m. and noon to 2 p.m. Because of social distancing guidelines, the sale was expanded to 6 days, and only 100 people will be allowed in each session. The sale continues today and Thursday. There will not be a 50% off day, but the nonprofit might do that in December or January, said Tracy Renton, Development Director for Senior Life. Flu shot clinic set for those 60 and older. A flu vaccination clinic for residents 60 and older will be held this month at the Midland Health Department, Kingsway Mall, 3303 West Illinois Avenue. The clinic is 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. The health department also provides clinical services by appointment only, 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m., Monday through Friday. For more information or to make an appointment, call 681-7613.
Obituaries for October 20th. Ima Woods. Ima Laverne Lee Woods, 94, of Midland, Texas, finished her temporal journey on Earth on October 15th, 2020. Laverne is survived by her son, Dennis Woods, and wife Linda of Lubbock, son Donald Woods and wife Rita of Midland, Texas, grandson Tyler Woods of Midland, Texas, grandson Colby Woods of Midland, Texas, granddaughter Barbara Peacock of Dallas, Texas, Eric Peacock of Midland, Texas, and great-grandsons Adam Hoover and wife Laura, Nathan Hoover and wife Abigail, and Bryce Peacock, and four great-grandchildren. No visitation will be held. Funeral services are at 2 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd, 2020, at the Chapel of Hope Funeral Home, Hobbs, New Mexico. Burial will follow at Prairie Haven Cemetery in Hobbs, New Mexico. Condolences can be made online at thechapelofhopefunerals.com. As mandated by the governor of New Mexico, occupancy is limited to 40%, and face masks are required and not provided by the funeral home. Death notices. Francisca Urias Ramirez. Francisca Urias Ramirez, 75, of Midland, passed away Sunday, October 18th. The viewing will be Tuesday, October 20th, 2020, from 2 to 9, with a prayer service starting at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. A funeral service is set for Wednesday, October 21st, 2020, at 2 p.m. in the Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband, Ramon Ramirez, three sons, Ray Ramirez, Richard Ramirez, and Josue Ramirez, two daughters, Norma R. Hernandez and Becky Brown. Jesus J. Garnica, Sr. Jesus J. Garnica, Sr. of 58 of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, October 14th. The viewing will be at Heavenly Gates, 405 North Terrell in Midland, Texas, 79701, on Monday, October 19th, 2020, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening. Funeral Mass, Wednesday, October 21st, 2020, at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Catholic Church. He is survived by his wife, Sylvia Garnica, his daughter, Rebecca McFadden, son, Jesus Garnica Jr., his daughter, Margaret Dominguez, two brothers and three sisters and two grandchildren. Josephine Martinez. Josephine Martinez, 75, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 18th, 2020, in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m., Thursday, October 22nd, 2020, at Willowbrook Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Park. Pastor Tony DeLuna is officiating. Arrangements are by Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Midland.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, October 20th. Trustees to hear employment report. The Ector County Independent School District Board of Trustees will hear a presentation on personnel or human capital today during its regular board meeting. The meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. ECISD is taking steps to protect against the spread of COVID-19 with staff and in the community. Attendees are required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing the building. Visitors are required to wear face masks. The presentation reviews the demographic makeup of teachers and students, where teachers come from, years of service, efforts to attract, recruit, grow, and retain teachers, and reasons for leaving ECISD, among other things. An exit survey shows most teachers leave due to relocation and personal family obligations, followed closely by retirement. Many teachers coming from ECISD are from Midland ISD, but ECISD also loses teachers to MISD. 29% of teachers, or 564, have 1 to 5 years of experience. 35% or 351 are first-year teachers. 21% or 417 have 11 to 20 years of experience. 16% or 306 have 6 to 10 years of experience. And 322 or 16% have over 20 years of experience. ECISD currently has 31,902 students. Hispanic or Latino students make up 77% of the student population, while 49% of teachers are Hispanic or Latino. 42% of teachers are white. Also during the meeting, a public hearing on financial accountability or financial integrity rating system of Texas, FIRST, will be conducted. The district got an A based on data from the fiscal year ended June 30, 2019. Supplemental agenda information said. A public hearing of the district's first rating for 2018-19 data, along with a management record that includes all of the required information as established by the Commissioner of Education, is included. The public is invited to comment on the report. Under special presentations, Executive Director for Leadership, Stacy Johnson, Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Lilia Nanez, and Executive Director for Leadership, Corey Seymour, will be recognized for being accepted to the National Superintendent's Academy. The Governor's Proclamation of Education Human Resources Day and Principal Appreciation Month will be announced. Animal Control Wants to Educate by Royal McGregor. Fresh out of the Academy, Joe Barrarez said he felt confident answering his first snake call with the Odessa Police Department's Animal Control Division. The Odessa native said he grabbed his snake tongs from his truck after he saw the snake. However, the snake wrapped around Joe Barrera's snake tongs and bent them. Barrera's said the snake turned out to be a 7.5-foot rattlesnake. Barrera's, who has spent the last 15 years as the field operations manager and cruelty investigator for OPD, said that was the largest rattlesnake call he's taken during his time with the police department. Barrera said animal control consists of four animal control officers, field operations supervisor, and himself. He said animal control receives calls 24 hours a day about domesticated and wild animals. The number of calls and the volume of calls do peak at certain times of the day, time of the year, and depending on what's going on, Barreras said. Though Barreras wants to ensure the safe handling of domesticated and wild animals, he said human safety takes precedence. He said he enjoys informing the public on how to treat animals. Barreras was invited Wednesday to teach an animal handling course for Fix West Texas, which is a group aimed to help spay, neuter, and provide other affordable services to pet owners in West Texas. Sometimes people will see a pet and their natural instinct is to pet it or touch it, Barreras said. Even if you have permission from the owner, they are all things of trigger effects that could spark the animal's reactionary instinct and it could bite. Some of the worst bites I've seen working here weren't from the aggressive animal that's trying to maul or hurt someone. It's because they were startled, scared, or stepped on. Use caution. Use distance. Barreras said he hasn't received many strange calls, but he explained there have been a couple unusual ones, a bear calls that happened near the Ector County and Reeves County border, and a cobra that was brought into city limits. According to a City of Odessa ordinance, citizens aren't allowed to have snakes that contain poison, either in venom glands or in other organs or tissues, which include all species of rattlesnakes. Barreras said many of the wildlife calls animal control gets deal with snakes, rattlesnakes rather, coyotes, bobcats, and mountain lions. Barreras explained that he doesn't want to immediately hand out citations when it comes to animal cruelty. The Odessa native said he wants to educate, inform, and then enforce. Every time we get out there, we look to educate the public, Barreras said. If we can teach people how to take care of the animal properly, it's a win for us. ECED Board to Renew Operations by Michael Merlo. Members of the Ector County Emergency District Board will open a public hearing during a meeting today to discuss keeping the 911 system localized or whether it should be discontinued and run by the state. The meeting will start at 6 p.m. at the offices of the Emergency Communication District of Ector County, located at 700 North Hancock Avenue in Odessa. Executive Director of the Emergency District of Ector County, Kevin Jones, said in a phone interview that the board votes to keep 911 operations localized every few years. "It's a deal we've been doing every 3 years. We've never had anybody from the public show up, but basically it's a way out if the district is failing. Of course, ours isn't," he said. Jones said that while some emergency districts charge up to 6% of their base telephone rates, Ector County's district charges are below 2%, which he detailed was around 62 cents for a landline and 50 cents for a cellular monthly phone bill. "Your phone bill will tell you 911 surcharge, and that's us. The 911 system and upkeep costs anywhere from around $5,000 to $10,000 a month. We've been working on cutting the cost, buying proper technology to help us to do that," he said. Jones said they have added the track to numbers on maps, allow text messaging, and he looks forward to videos, pictures, and streaming. The employees at Odessa Fire Rescue, Odessa Police Department, or the Ector County Sheriff's Office are city or county employees, but that 911 emergency equipment at their desks is funded by the district, he said. "We just maintain the system and keep it operational. The county, for example, all of their phone equipment is ours, with the exception of their internal phone system. The city, they've asked that they put all of their stuff onto our phone sets, which we have the capability to do, and we do. The 911 infrastructure is totally ours. The state system is a little different. Without this, what would happen is all of our money in Ector County would go to the state, and then the state would say which county would get it," he said. COVID news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,726. Ector County negative, 24,828 out of 30,890 tested, with 336 pending, 112 deaths. Recovered, 4,734. Active, 880. ECISD daily cases, 3 students, 2 staff. Midland County, 4,550 confirmed cases with 89 deaths. Texas, 828,527 confirmed with 7,384,043 tested. Total Texas deaths, 17,022. U.S. cases, 8,442,304 total confirmed, and 225,146 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us. Quick hits. Have you voted? Early voting continues through October 30th. The Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th Street, Room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 24th, 26th through the 30th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. October 25th. 4 other voting locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. October 24th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. October 25th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. October 26th through the 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th through the 30th at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, Westlake Hardware Store, 4652 East University Boulevard, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street. So far in Ector County, 12,687 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Odessa Friendly Program. Discover Odessa has scheduled Odessa Friendly Program from 1 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, or 8:30 a.m. to noon Thursday at the Ellen Newell Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard. Learn how to be Texas friendly with a certified instructor through Texas Pecos Trail. The event is free. RSVP is required to attend. Spaces limited. Face masks and social distancing will be implemented. To RSVP, call 333-7872 or email Carmen, C-A-R-M-E-N, T, at discoverodessa.org. For more information, visit discoverodessa.org. Police searching for teenager involved in fatal shooting. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a teenager who was arrested last week in connection to a fatal shooting that happened in September in North Odessa. Isaiah Mazzaril, 18, was charged with one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a first-degree felony, and is wanted on 2 additional counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a first-degree felony. Anyone with information about the whereabouts of Bezerel is asked to contact Detective S. Chavez at 432-335-4926. Or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. According to a previous Odessa American article, Tezavier Jackson was charged with murder, a first-degree felony, after he was involved in a fatal shooting that happened at 4:11 p.m. Saturday in the 1800 block of East 49th Street. He has one bond totaling $500,000 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit details that officers arrived at the scene and found one of the gunshot victims, who was identified as 20-year-old Xavier Joseph, It was later reported that two other gunshot victims, 18-year-old Emmanuel Urias and 16-year-old juvenile male, were transported by private vehicle to Odessa Regional Medical Center. Urias was reportedly pronounced dead at the hospital. Officers interviewed Joseph and another man identified as Timothy Hulbert. Both stated the man, later identified as Jackson, was the person that shot at the vehicle that was occupied by Urias and the juvenile male. Detectives reportedly located Jackson and he was interviewed about the shooting. Jackson admitted to being involved with the shooting and stated he shot at the vehicle. He stated the young men in the vehicle were shooting at them, so he started to shoot back at them. Distemper outbreak reported. Odessa Animal Control was recently notified by a rescue group that some of its dogs that were rescued contracted distemper. Once notified of the issue, proactive measures were taken to prevent the possible spread of the contagious disease. Due to this outbreak, Animal Control began working with a local veterinarian. Five animals tested positive for distemper, including one that was later euthanized as a result. The animals which tested positive were immediately placed into isolation, and the remaining animals that were possibly exposed are currently being quarantined. This shelter will open on Tuesday upon advice of the veterinarian. Local News Roundup. Free COVID-19 Testing. The City of Odessa, in partnership with the University of Texas Permian Basin, has scheduled free mobile COVID-19 testing events at the following times, dates, and locations. Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Woodson Park Parking Lot, 1020 East Murphy Street. October 28th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Slater Park Parking Lot, 1001 West 38th Street. November 4th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Central Park East 13th Street Parking Lot. November 18th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Ratliff Stadium Parking Lot, 1862 East Yukon Road. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event for Odessa and Ector County residents. First come, first serve. Residents must show proof of residency. Participants must remain in their vehicle with the window up until a testing team member approaches you. No appointments or pre-registration required. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. For more information, call 557-6557. Town Hall. U.S. Representative K. Michael Conaway, Republican, Texas, has scheduled a town hall from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday at Garden City Community Center, 117 South Merle Street, Garden City. This will be the final town hall in Garden City hosted by Conaway as the member of Congress for the 11th District of Texas. Face coverings and social distancing is encouraged. Please note that the event is subject to change and capacity will be limited in accordance with guidelines and recommendations outlined by the governor. The town hall is open to the public and members of the media. Visit conaway.house.gov. Membership Drive. Odessa Arts has launched its annual membership drive. Included in the membership incentives is a members-only look inside the newly remodeled Ector Theater on Wednesday with a special one-night-only screening of the Stevie Nicks concert film, 24 Karat Gold. Odessa Arts has launched its annual membership drive. Included in the membership incentives is a members-only look inside the newly remodeled Ector Theater on Wednesday with a special one-night-only screening of the Stevie Nicks concert film, 24 Karat Gold. Before COVID hit, our membership drive included tickets to the Odessa Shakespeare Festival, Executive Director Randy Hamm said. Since the festival will be going virtual this year, we were looking for an opportunity to find a replacement event. Luckily, the stars aligned and we were able to book this exclusive film event and give the community a sneak peek at the Ector. The film features a set list of fan favorites, favorite Nicks songs from her solo career, and as a member of Fleetwood Mac, including Rhiannon, Stop Dragging My Heart Around, Edge of 17, Stand Back, Landslide, and more, as well as other tunes from her platinum-selling catalog. The film also reveals intimate storytelling and inspirations for some of the most famous songs and lyrics. To ensure the safety of the audience, seating is limited and open only to Odessa Arts members at the patron level or above. Seating will be assigned and masks will be required. That's one of the great things about this drive. We've also commissioned local artists to design masks for our membership. Four different designs from four artists will be available with your membership as well, Ham said. To secure tickets as well as other membership incentives, visit https://odessaarts.org/become-a-member/. Death notices from the Odessa American for Tuesday, October 20th. Josephine Ramirez Martinez, 75, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 18th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 22nd, at Willow Brook Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Park. Pastor Tony DeLuna is officiating. Arrangements are by Willow Brook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. James Marlon Davis, 81, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 17th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. October 21st at Bethel Assembly of God Church. Burial will be at 1 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd at Ector County Cemetery. Reverend John Van Hoos is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Harry Edward Susan, 75, of Odessa, died Wednesday, October 14th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st at Sherwood Church of Christ. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. German Carrasco, 10, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 15th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, October 23rd at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.